Midwest Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Glad you're with us today. Our goals are to bring you credible and valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. Centrico's Voices addresses how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community and how we will look at the long-term ramifications of change and, in some cases, lack of change in our society and how that affects things that we deal with on a daily basis or how we deal with things beyond our local area from time to time. Today's topic has an interesting slant on it in that this week we are part of, through NPR, participating in a national week of conversation along with other member stations on a program called a Nation Engaged. What we want to do is basically ask questions and look at how things that go on in the creative economy of the United States, or how we create in the economy, if you will, a better environment for Americans. And this is a project that NPR stations throughout the United States are taking on this week and over a series of weeks. As we continue this collaboration as a part of the NPR program and special reports, I'm joined by representatives from the California arm of a national effort known as America's Job Center, where they work to achieve sustainable economic growth, meet the demands of global competition in the changing economy, and meet those changes on a local level as they look at the world's economy and the nation's economy, and generally how they improve the quality of life in California. And this is a conversation we want to hope that you'll be part of. This is a call-in program, and you're welcome to give us a call at 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. My guests today are Ann Guthrie. She's the Vice President of Workforce Development Services for Goodwill Central Coast and America's Job Center of California. Allison Schiavo, that was wrong. What,
Schiavo.
Schiavo, pardon me, I'm sorry. And she is the Workforce Services Director of Slo County for Goodwill Industries, or Goodwill of the Central Coast. And Chuck Jaley, okay, he's the Program Director of Mission Community Services Corporation. I guess probably what we want to start with is, what in the world is the America's Job Center of California? Because I think for an awful lot of people, that's an unknown quantity unless you happen to be directly involved with it. Who would like to share first on that, I guess?
Well, I can start, okay. And then Allison can fill in some details.
Go ahead. That's Ann. Go ahead.
Yeah. So it's a very comprehensive center, one-stop shop for workforce services for both job seekers and employers in the community. And so for job seekers, it's a complicated, complex world of figuring out what you want to do, how you're going to get the training to do what you want to do in the labor market, where are the jobs. And so coming to America's Job Center here in San Luis Obispo is a place where job seekers can get the one-on-one coaching they need to figure out what are the career pathways that meet their skills and where are those jobs. And then not only getting JOBs, right, but getting better jobs. You know, how do we help people actually reach self-sufficiency through quality employment? And then for employers, we address employers' needs. Employers are looking for where's the talent? And we help match job seekers to local businesses in the community. And then, you know, obviously, incumbent workforce, they have frontline workers that need to upskill. And so how can we partner with businesses to upskill their current employees? And Allison directs our local America Job Centers of California here in San Luis Obispo. Okay. So
what's the origin of American Job Centers? How long has it been around as an entity, and where did it start?
Sure. So it's been around since 1998 it started as Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act in 1998, and prior to that it was JTPA and CETA. It's been around forever, but nationwide we Department of Labor branded it as America's Job Centers of California. American job centers nationwide, so that no matter where you go or live, you know how to access these services. It's funded through Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. It's taxpayer funded, and so all of our services are no charge to job seekers and employers because they've already paid into it.
Okay. The concept of where the job market is right now has been something that is to say that it's been debated, I guess, is an understatement. There is the perception that as the job market grows in our country, but specifically this is affected by the Central Coast or affects the Central Coast, where there's a lot of job opportunities that are related to tourism and perceived by a lot of people to only be entry-level jobs that never have what we would classify as head of household incomes or those kind of job descriptions. There seems to be an underlying discussion both in this political season and in the country generally, which is, yes, there are more jobs, but none of them are living wages. Or the very few of them are living wages. Is this a concept that we're indeed fighting with or struggling with, or is it a public perception that doesn't fit the situation?
Well, I think since the Great Recession, there has been a glut of low wage, low skill work, and that's where the increases of the jobs have been. And the middle wages have been stagnant for 7 years. But right now, it's actually a really exciting time and a good time to look for a job based on a couple of things happening in the workforce. The minimum wage is increasing in California. So we are realizing that on a minimum wage, if you're working full time, you should not be in poverty. So it's a really exciting time for our policies to address that and to see wages increase through the minimum wage. And then we also have that farmers bill that just came out, right, where, farmers are actually going to be paid overtime after working 8 hours instead of the 10 hours that it was. So, again, we are seeing a huge shift in how work is actually going to actually pay off and allow people to meet their living expenses. And then the median wage, there's been a lot of press about this, has increased up 5.2% from 2014, which is the sharpest annual increase on record. And the nation's poverty rate fell to 13.5%, which is the largest single-year percentage drop since 1989. And we have a ways to go, right, because the median income is still below what it was in 2007. But this is really exciting news right now, and it's an exciting time to be a job seeker. I know especially in San Luis Obispo, we have a very good, the unemployment rate is 4.6, which is below California, which is below the nation. And so that it's really a job seekers market. And employers are really trying to find job seekers. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that even though we have some ways to go, we're seeing trends happening in the middle skill, mid-wage jobs right now that are actually going to grow. And as a part of the America's Job Center, we have the resources to help people figure out what those career pathways are and get them training for those credentials in middle-skill jobs.
Okay. What the average worker who does not feel they are currently in an environment where they're making a living wage or making a wage at their potential of what they believe they should make, what is the way that worker gets into an environment where they even have the time or inclination to fix it? I mean, if I'm struggling, the likelihood is I'm struggling with more than a 40-hour a week job, or I'm struggling with multiple jobs, mm-hmm. which is not giving me much in the way of opportunities to even, the old, if you're up to your in alligators, it's hard to drain the swamp mentality, which I think is realistic for a lot of people. If I'm barely squeaking by, today I'm worried about whether or not I can pay my car insurance tomorrow, the rent's due in 2 days, and the price of my baby formula for my child went up at the market last week. I don't have time to maybe give you a call and talk about what I can do to get out of the cycle I'm currently in. And I'm wondering what that must take some positive outreach to find those people. Okay. And they're probably as a population not easily discernible because they don't put their hand up and say, "Hey, are you paying attention to me?" So I don't know how we look at that.
We provide a lot of outreach, so Allison can speak to some of the outreach we've been doing.
Yeah, we partner with other agencies in the community who are delivering services to people in need. Our niche really is the employment component. And so when they go to Department of Social Services for food stamps or seek out housing assistance, we have partnerships with those agencies, and they'll give us a call or send us a referral. We have a pretty robust website that people can access. But you're right, when you're stressed out, you're oftentimes too busy to access services. But we're here for people when they need it. And one of the nice things is we have some money available, quite a bit of money available, actually, to help people who are working jobs that don't pay a family-sustaining wage get trained to do something else. Because what we hear from employers is that they have openings, but they aren't finding people locally who can meet their needs. And so what we're here to do is help train the local workforce to take those jobs so that people aren't coming in from elsewhere to take the jobs that do pay well. One of the trends we're seeing is that it used to be a myth is that you have to have a bachelor's degree in order to get a good job, and that's just not true anymore. And so we can help people get a quick turnaround industry-recognized credential or skills in digital literacy or computers that doesn't take a whole lot of time that they can do while they're working a part-time job. And then they don't have to go into debt to get the skills they need.
Let me remind you, this is a program that we're having today on Central Coast Voices, talking about workforce trends in the economy and the job market and how we can look at those. And I'm with representatives from a program called America's Job Center of California. And your calls are welcome. We'd like you to be part of the discussion. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. I guess this is a question I have to ask because I scratched my head as I went through the material. How does the America's Job Center and Goodwill fit together? And let's get that one out of the way.
So, Goodwill, our whole goal and mission is to provide employment and training services to help people achieve their goals, reach financial stability, and pursue economic opportunity. And we realize that and we support that mission through our donated goods retail program, which is what most people know us for, right? When you donate to Goodwill or when you shop in our stores, you're helping people find jobs and you're helping people access education and training services to find better jobs.
There are members of my family who would say you have the best women's blue jean department in the world.
Great. It's hard to find pants as a woman, so that's good.
that's what they say.
Yeah. Especially ones with pockets.
Yeah.
So part of that mission – so we serve people in two major ways, right, through our retail operations. So we provide economic mobility services for our own employees to advance up within Goodwill or up and out to advance their careers out in the community. We also use our retail operations to provide work-learn opportunities, temporary paid work positions for individuals with barriers to employment, like single mothers in the Welfare to Work program, for instance, so they can get – on the job experience, but really the confidence and the skills they need to get employment out in the community. But then the second biggest way we help people find work and increase their financial stability is partnering with community organizations to deliver services for the public. And one of the major ways we do that is through the America's Job Centers of California. And we have four career centers, and one of them is in San Luis Obispo that Allison directs. So we partner with the Workforce Development Board. They just changed their name, so I'm always correcting myself. The Workforce Development Board. We partner with them to provide these services with a lot of other partners, including the Employment Development Department and some other partners that Allison can further explain.
Okay. Well, then Chuck's been sitting here quietly and patiently because, Chuck, I have to confess, when I look at the name of the organization you're with, it does not tell me anything about what you guys do other than community services. So can you tell me about Mission Community Services and how you fit in this package?
Sure, Fred. Thank you very much. We are Mission Community Services, and we were started 10 years ago, by Mission Community Bank, thus the name Mission Community. But we're also host to the Small Business Administration's Women's Business Center. And with that, we're charged with helping women and men, we don't discriminate, to start a business. And our focus, our target group, if you will, is low-income people, women, minorities, veterans, anyone seeking to start a business, really to help in their own income self-determination, we call it. Because oftentimes, you know, if you have a job that's $10, $12 an hour, that's what you're going to make. But if you own your own business, you have the potential to make a whole lot more.
Okay. Good point. The perception, Allison, you talked earlier about the perception that the only good jobs come with a four-year college degree. Mm-hmm. I want to turn that around because this is actually a discussion that I had with someone recently, and that is that there are a lot of college graduates who believe there are very few entry-level jobs for that they can use with their degree. And it was actually a reasonably recent, 4 or 5 years ago, college graduate who is currently working for a company I will not name, who basically said, you know, I got this degree and I really wanted to move forward in my career. And I realize I'm surrounded by people in my current job who do not have college degrees. We're all doing very well and we're happy where we are working. But their perception was there's a lot of people like them that have college degrees that look at what's available, and if they don't see on a job requirement list that a degree is expected, they oftentimes will think the job is below them. I don't mean below them as far as they wouldn't do it. A lot of them basically says, I want a job. I need to get started. I need to be doing something. But a perception that they're going to be seen by an employer as, okay, this person's got a BA in mathematics or biology, and I'm going to put them in a customer service job where I may be happy with them forever, but their perception may be this is only a job until I can get the heck out of Dodge. Mm-hmm. So the inverse for some employees, I think, works both ways with that. How does that get addressed, and are we looking at a job market where not only is a degree not always critical, but we get people who are competing with non-degreed individuals for the same jobs, and that this makes some players in the mix uncomfortable?
So I think that overcoming that concern of being overqualified really is on the applicant to address through the hiring process. Get creative with the cover letter. I say if you want the job, apply for it. What do you have to lose?
I think one major point is that the four-year college degree isn't eroding. There's different pathways to the middle class and high wage labor market, but 4 year degrees and advanced degrees after that is still a major, major, major pathway. And maybe when you get right out of college, you won't really see the fruit of your labors right away. But all the data shows that over time, individuals with a 4 year degree or more have a certain percent. I think it's definitely almost double than a high school diploma, but that it's even more than a 2 year degree over time.
Yeah, the earning potential is higher.
The earning potential is higher. And mm-hmm. then you're also able to more easily transfer to different industries with a four-year degree. I know that just me personally, I was in a career where I had I had a bachelor's degree, but if I didn't get my master's, it would be harder for me to go to a new city, to go to a new sector. So I don't want – even though we're going to really focus on – the fact that there's 1 and 2 year certifications that will get you really good wages, the 4 year degree is still very sought after.
And oftentimes I think employers will evaluate an individual's experience in addition to their education. So it's not one or the other, it's a combination of things. And I think they, you know, unless the job classification requires a degree, I would expect that most employers would look for the right ecological fit over a specific degree.
And there's some major employers in San Luis Obispo County that I know of that have entry-level jobs filled by people with college degrees, mm-hmm. and some without them. And my inquiry to those those employers has been, it's not something that we believe people have to have, but we don't look at it as overqualified. Everybody's an individual. Mm-hmm. By the way, that came from somebody who's involved in personnel issues at one of the largest employers in the county, where they see people sitting next to each other that fit across the board with that. I want to remind you that this is an interesting discussion we're having today on America's Job Center of California and the job market on the Central Coast. You're welcome to give us a call at 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. Hold on, let's see. Is it Alexandra? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay,
I'm here.
You're on the air. What do you want to lend to this discussion?
Well, I want to give a shout out to the Run Start Grow program through the Women's Business Center. I'm the GMO free baker, and I started my business as a result of taking that class. I bake specialty cakes, wedding cakes, birthday cakes. I do it all GMO free. And when I thought about starting this business, there were a great number of skills that I didn't know were going to be required to get this going. And that Run, Start, Grow program taught me so much. And in our community, getting paid what we need to get paid, to pay the kind of rent we need to pay, there are so many people out there with just really wonderful ideas. And that Run, Start, Grow program can really get you going on a path that really aligns with who you are. And so, hi, Chuck.
Hi, I
know
Alexandra.
Chuck. And he didn't tell me to call, by the way. I was just listening to this program and wanted everyone to know that program is out there because it's unbelievable. And I got certificates from people all over the state congratulating me for completing this program.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Now we'll put Chuck on the spot. Thank you.
Yes. Thanks, Alexandra. Yeah, she was one of our graduates from our summer program. It's a 12-week course. We teach self-employment training classes that are 12 weeks in English. Then we have a 10-week program in Spanish. And it takes you through every little thing you need to start a business. And at the end, there's a graduation ceremony. You receive certificates. And this time, we had certificates from Lieutenant Governor, the County Board of Supervisors, everyone you can think of. And it really means a lot to the students to get these because it's a validation for what they did and the hard work they put in. There's homework involved. And Alexandra is a great success story, and we've had many others, too, ranging from a clothing company. It was a gender-neutral clothing company to one of her ex-teachers actually started a company selling coffee. It's called Nuts About Toffee. It's a great little candy store, candy products. Then we had a hair salon, a legal document preparer. People ask me, what do your businesses do? And, there's not one thing. It's all over the board. But one thing most of them have in common is that they're solo entrepreneurs. They're going to be one-person businesses. And, they'll also, 10% of them grow on to be big businesses. But, what's the option for people rather than being a solo entrepreneur, making $10 an hour somewhere? So here, as Alexandra said, she's got a chance to make a viable income for herself. And so do the others that go through the classes. So congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. The perception for a lot of people is that Chuck hit on part of it, that the successful small businesses around here are one-person operations or one-person operations with one or two clerical people to help out, and that doesn't always mean opportunities. I met a gentleman last week who is involved in a product that he developed when he lived in Virginia. He moved here to be with family, and he does most of what he does is online mail order of the product to commercial industries. And his comment was that a good portion of his effort to find people to help him, and in his case, he's building a part-time force that could become a full-time force, is there's no way for individual businesses like that to find a pool of people. The unemployment office does not keep as extensive a job board as they used to have. The local print newspaper doesn't have if it has a help wanted page, it's mostly a few government jobs or university jobs, I guess it's a government job, and things like that. So the average person, I'm wondering where they even think
so
to go look.
So an employer is having problems finding employees. That's a good problem to have because
yeah,
we have some responses
I'm not quite sure if he says he's having trouble finding employees. He's having trouble finding a way to make it even known he's here.
Okay.
Because if he's looking for someone, he may be looking for some. He said, you know, it was a rather nebulous conversation, I'll confess. But the concept of if I'm looking for someone to fill a part-time position that I may need to fill in the next 2 weeks, mm-hmm. I don't have 2 months to figure out where to find that person. And I think for a lot of people in the community, that indeed is a factor.
He should come to America's Job Center.
Okay.
We can recruit, screen people. If he tells us what he's looking for, we can go through a statewide database. We can promote it on social media. We have ways of getting in touch with people who are looking for work. And we can vet candidates for them, for businesses, and then refer over the people who sort of meet the needs of the business. We also have funding available for businesses who need to hire on new people. The people they may be seeing don't have exact skills that they're looking for. We have funds to reimburse employers for the wages that people earn while they're in training. So the person gets on the job, production slows down a little bit while everybody else is teaching them how to do the job. We can reimburse up to 50% for those wages while someone's learning a new job.
Okay. Early in the conversation, obviously our listeners can't see you, but I looking at you, you made a comment about we have funds available, mm-hmm. and you got a look on your face, which I would classify and have to translate this way. We have funds available that are not getting used as extensively as we would mm-hmm. like them to be used, and people are not asking for what we have available in some cases. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's an ongoing situation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to pick on you. I don't want to pick on the job center. But I'm wondering if you have a PR difficulty. Maybe that's one reason why you're here, of course. But this is a program that's been going on for a while now, mm-hmm. and there are still a lot of people who don't know you exist.
Mm-hmm.
Is that been an ongoing problem? And you know, it's other than a skywriter or a bunch of billboards. How do you find the people who are most likely needing your services, who oftentimes are too busy or too preoccupied by getting by to know you even exist?
Well, again, we partner with agencies in the community, and so when they do great hard work getting people the services that they need to survive, and they can count on us to do the employment component, because oftentimes people in crisis aren't just struggling with one thing. It's not just they need a job. There are multiple things going on, and we can help them with that. We also go out to Paso Robles, and we're in Grover Beach weekly to meet with people. We can Skype with people if they have barriers to transportation. One of the things that we also have funding for is overcoming those access barriers. So we can give people a gas card to participate in services with us. We're looking at extending our hours so that those underemployed people, the people who have jobs that aren't leading to self-sufficiency wages, jobs that just aren't good enough for them, can come and access our services outside of work, typical business hours.
And we have staff that actually proactively go out, mm-hmm. you know, because it's not fair to say, you know, businesses should just kind of walk on in passively to the job center, right? Mm-hmm. So we have two mm-hmm. Job developers that will go out and meet with businesses one-on-one. And we're really geared to not only meeting with businesses on one issue or one service, but what are all of the issues that they're facing in terms of their workforce needs, and how do our job developers align the already existing services in the community, whether it's the chamber or the Economic Vitality Group Commission, to help that business with their workforce needs and other needs, especially when it comes to training and finding and retaining their talent. So we're focused on the boots on the ground efforts right now to expand that.
Okay. We have a caller. Let me go. Let's see. Bill in Arroyo Grande. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi. Have we spoken before? And I'm going to continue beating a dead horse. But my idea to solve this problem is, and we've got two problems in the county, I think, is a housing shortage and a labor shortage. And what I would propose is establishing some kind of a mentoring program where retired plumbers and carpenters and electricians could take young men or women into their homes or put them up in trailers on their property and train them into jobs in exchange for a place to live, and maybe trade them with other tradespeople who are looking for casual labor.
That's a good point. Bill, thanks for the call, and I'll let my guests see if we can run with this.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
Okay. Brings up a good point, and an element of that is the housing market that we have, and we've talked about many times, is very, very limited and very difficult. 50 years ago, maybe 60 years ago, someone who was in the kind of situation that Bill's talking about, or that a lot of the people in that are your clients are talking about, might have been able to basically live in a rooming house or a boarding house. They existed. I happen to know, I actually own a piece of rental property in Atascadero that is currently 3 rental units, and it was converted that way long before I owned it, that started out as a 7-room boarding house when it was built in 1913, owned by 2 sisters. It was one of the original colony houses in Atascadero. So there are people who aren't getting any housing or having very limited housing, and we're maybe not being creative enough about that. But he brings up a good point. Are there ways to tie housing needs and employment needs together, or is that an issue that's unfortunately left the table? Who wants to jump in?
Well, we partner with the local housing authority on some programs so that we are targeting folks who are using vouchers and in Section 8 so that they can move from subsidized to unsubsidized housing. So in terms of integrating housing services and workforce services, that would be a major priority to start moving the needle on both of those fronts. I know that looking at United Way's real cost measure in California, where United Way has researched, what is the living wage for certain household family sizes, and they have found that about 30% of families in San Luis Obispo are living below the self-sufficiency wage, right? But when Allison and I looked at a lot of the labor market data, we're seeing a lot of great growth in middle-skill, middle-wage jobs that have the average wage right in that sweet spot of, if you are a single mother with 2 kids, of the real cost wage. So what we're really focusing on right now is how do we meet people where they're at, working with our different community partners who are struggling financially on the edge, and help them get into these short-term credential trainings that will boost their incomes to that living wage standard.
Who's operating the short-term credential programs? Is it through Cuesta College, or where are those happening?
Cuesta College offers some great programs. There are several for-profit training providers in the community that also do vocational skills training.
What kind of without giving the turning this into a commercial for private businesses, if you will, what kind of skills are being taught?
So a lot of the funding that we get right now is going towards transportation and logistics type training. We've got tons of truck drivers going into a 6-week program fully funded by America's Job Center, and then they're coming out with jobs that are $20, $25, $35 an hour. It's 6 weeks turnaround. We're funding healthcare sector training, which is great because you can get stackable credentials. You can start as a CNA or a phlebotomist or a medical assistant and, get a job that pays better than what you're earning now, and then continue on for longer-term training to become an RN. Those programs at Cuesta are pretty impacted, but I think it's because they pay really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those stackable credentials are very important, especially for people who are, like you said in the beginning of the show, they're just living day to day and trying to juggle kids and maybe even more than one job, right? Because sometimes one job doesn't meet your basic living expenses. So we're focusing on how do we work with folks in that situation to provide them with the funding. So we have funding available for folks who want to get credentials. And then some barrier busting supports to provide supportive funding services for childcare, transportation, books to go to school. And we're very focused on career pathways that lead to living wage jobs. We're not doing the whole just get a JOB. It's not a work first program, which is a very exciting time right now. So healthcare, logistics, IT, they have short-term stackable credentials so you can actually move up over time instead of having to go to school for like 4 years and bouncing on it.
You know, there's a term out there now that we're going to be going to what's called a gig economy. You know, the musicians, when they get a job, it's called a gig because it's a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But they're talking about that now with the millennials. And I think, Anne, what you're talking about with the stackable certificates, you know, they get a certificate, they can weld. Okay, so that's a gig. That's a job that lasts for a short period of time. Then they get a certificate for something else that'll last. And sometimes they do them all at the same time. You know, they may have three part-time jobs to equal a living. But, they're, you know, there's talk about that's the way the economy is going to be going.
Yeah, I think it you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, people got a job and expected to stay in that job for a long time and expected their employer to provide them opportunities to grow. And it's a much different market. I think the gig economy is interesting in that it provides people flexibility to take care of their kids or an aging family member. And I think, you know, one of the things we're exploring at America's Job Center is in an on-demand age, there are plenty of people who are coming in to go to Cal Poly or Cuesta from urban areas who expect on-demand services. And how can people in the local community capitalize on that through entrepreneurship or 1099 services, not just Uber, but TaskRabbit and these things? I think people are expecting to be able to pick up their mobile phone and get somebody to do something for them. And so how do we train people to have the skills they need to do that kind of work? And Chuck's Start, Run, Grow, I think, is great for people. He calls them tire kickers, which I love, right? You think you want to be a business owner, but you're not really sure. Going through a program like his gives people transferable skills. They become a better employee by learning the things. Whether or not they become a business owner right away or later on down the road, they become a better employee because they learn about budgeting, time management, all of those things I think employers want in an employee.
Have to confess, as a sole proprietor of my own business and no employees, I haven't quite figured out budget and time management very well, and I've only been doing my own stuff for 30 years. But it's a frustration that doesn't go away. You bring up a very interesting point, and I'm wondering, Chuck, are there situations where what is impeding some people from making those kind of leaps? Are my hypothetical, there may be a better way to chronicle this, if you will. If I want to start my business and I've got a great idea and I believe it can be successful in 6 to 8 months to at least give me the ability to pay my rent, but I need 6 to 8 months to do it and I don't have a job right now that pays me enough to give me that kind of cushion of time, that would seem to be a roadblock for a lot of entrepreneurs. Or potential entrepreneurs, I'm wondering how that particular roadblock gets addressed or if it's only perceived by me as a roadblock.
Well, there's various ways in order to finance your new business. You know, the best way is if your business is not new, it's been in business 2 or more years, then you can do traditional financing through a bank. If it's less than 2 years, then you go to what's called a microlender. And usually they top out at about a $50,000 loan. But they're more based on the ability of the company to repay the loan rather than your credit score or how long you've been in business. You know, if you're starting from scratch, if you don't have any experience in the industry you're in, then you may have to turn to what's known as friends and family. And that's a valid source of income, raising money.
They were
money.
My friends and family until I asked them for money. Yeah. But okay, sorry, yeah.
And hopefully your business model will make profit to keep you going. Mm-hmm. Yeah, until it turns an income. And that's also called bootstrapping, by the way. It's an old term. Yeah.
It's the we've looked at a number of things that people can consider doing. I'm wondering, there seems to be this perception that living on the Central Coast is always going to be difficult. We have to accept – well, we do accept the fact – currently that housing is expensive because of the desirability of the community, I think, more than anything else. Housing is a supply and demand product. Have we looked at and has the I know the United Way's report that, I think came out this week, have they looked at the Central Coast in relation to the other parts of the state? Are we fighting a different battle? Is this perception that most of our jobs that are available right now are service-only positions in hospitality, and therefore we have a problem with not enough industry around? Or is that only because we live here and we know we have a problem and we can't imagine that anybody else is fighting the same battle we're fighting? Where do we fit in the mix of the state of California, I guess, and the nation?
Well, we do have a very large tourism and hospitality sector. And, you know, that's not going to change because people want to come here to look at the beautiful mountains and coastline. And it's a beautiful place to visit. And we need the infrastructure and industries to support all those people flooding in to seeing our beautiful communities. There is a more percentage of jobs within that area than other parts of the country, and maybe even other parts of California. But we have seen a good some of the top growth industries are teachers, computer systems analysis, electricians, and healthcare, painting and construction, software developers, registered nurses. So I think sometimes we kind of miss that growth side of those jobs that are middle skill, middle wage, and high wage jobs. And they're growing at a very good clip, between 9% and 30%. I think we're on those lists. And the Workforce Development Board and the California Community Colleges have major initiatives right now to focus on those growth sectors and put in lots of money to make sure that we are aligning industry needs, you know, what are employers looking for within those specific growth sectors, and making sure all of our training providers, including the community colleges and career and technical institutions, that they have the credentials that matter to the businesses in our local community. So yes, there are a good number of jobs in the tourism and hospitality industries, but the middle skill, mid wage, and high wage jobs are growing, and a lot of resources are coming into the training and career pathways of those things.
Yeah. And one thing I'd like to say about that is, unlike other industries, if you start in a hotel or a restaurant, your opportunities to move into management without a 4-year degree are pretty high. So, it's a struggle to start at 10, 12 bucks an hour, but there are opportunities to move up. A lot of those businesses are larger businesses, and they, will hire from within and move people up. But what we're seeing when we look at labor market projections over the next 6 years is that there will be more growth in health services than hospitality, and it's population driven. It's related to our aging demographics. And so
don't look at me when you say that.
Okay.
It's okay.
There are opportunities there, and those are
the room.
Those are living wage jobs. And they're looking at, 4,000 new jobs over the next 6 years in health services, social services, and education. And those don't pay minimum wage. Those are much higher paying jobs.
And they're having trouble finding talented workers. 50% of the jobs here are paying middle skilled wages, $20 or more. But employers are having a hard time recruiting the talent they need to fill those positions. So we're coming in for that skills gap and training people to take those positions.
Is there an education process that employers might want to go through with the following concept, which is, if I can't find the worker that's already skilled enough, I need to come up with a training program in-house? And I'm wondering if that becomes a difficulty getting employers looking at. If you're a large employer, that's probably something that you commonly do. A smaller employer, that's it gets back to Bill's call. A someone who already has skills that wants to mentor somebody, that may work one-on-one in the plumbing or painting field. We may have employers that have difficulty understanding that that's a part of the mix.
There's another. I'll answer that indirectly. Another pathway. When in my age group, we could go to college and not decide what we wanted to do until we graduated. But nowadays, the suggestion is let's bring it down to the high school level mm-hmm. and start exposing kids to different career options and even test them for what they're good at. That way, when they get out of high school, they can study maybe not a whole four-year degree, but they just take those courses, you know, 1 year, 2 year in that area of specialty. And then when they graduated, you know, they're customized for that employer that's looking for certain skills. Mm-hmm. And so that's a new pathway that's being developed with some of the initiatives.
Yeah. What are some of those mid-level or mid-range jobs? Because I'm trying to think of what those positions might be. They may be things that the average person, including me, doesn't know what kind of job that would be.
So Allison already mentioned the healthcare sector, which has really defined career pathways where you can work your way up with different credentials along that spectrum. So, you know, registered nurses, medical assistants, dental hygienists, pharmacy techs, those are middle skill, mid-wage jobs because you don't necessarily need – you need more than a high school diploma.
Okay. Understood, yeah.
So, but you need less than a four-year degree. So middle skill is, you know, 1 or 2 year training, industry recognized training certifications and credentials.
So and this goes back to I think something that Allison said earlier. We have this perception that to really succeed you need a 4 year degree. So there's a good segment of the population that basically says, I'm never going to get beyond the job I have because I don't have an opportunity for a 4 year degree. So they never think about some other training.
Right.
And that's so that may be
one thing is awareness, right?
Yeah, that's
what
it. Yeah.
It's a very it's you know, you can't just graduate from high school and get a job or get a good job anyway anymore the way it used to be. And so we have, you know, we need to work with career counselors, whether it's in secondary education, whether it's in the high school, or whether it's in post-secondary, those mm-hmm. career counselors to make sure students and adults just working are aware of their options. What are the careers? Pathway options. And that's what, if you come into the American Job Centers and work with Allison and her team, they help one-on-one figure out what options are available for people in those careers.
Okay. Well, we're not the end of the program. We still have 12 minutes left, but I want to make sure we give everybody an opportunity because as I've told our listeners before and I told all three of you before we started, and that is there are many things that I forget to ask about or I'm clueless about. So I want to give all of you an opportunity, and I'll start with you, Allison. What do you want to make sure that we know about that maybe we didn't hit on, that we didn't ask about, that that you want to make sure everyone knows is available to them?
I'd like everyone to know that if you're not working and looking for work, if you're working a job you're not happy in, if you're a business owner and you need to help finding talented, qualified staff, you should give us at America's Job Center a call. We have funding available to help people get retrained, upskill. People who can't do the job they used to do, we can take a look at your transferable skills, what you like to do, what opportunities exist in the local labor market, and get you on the path to the job that you want that leads to self-sufficient wages. We've got on-the-job training funds available to businesses, so when you are hiring on new staff, or if you have staff you'd like to promote up into different jobs within your company, we can come in, help you build a training plan for your new or current employees, and we can reimburse you the wages that they earn while they're in training. They get assistance with overcoming barriers. You know, that first 90 days is pretty tenuous on the job. Your expenses are exceeding your income until you start, you know, earning a regular paycheck, and we can help make sure that they show up to work on time every time and they don't have barriers that that are unsupported.
And I want to remind listeners that that you've made it real clear that you have more resources than people are utilizing. There are very few nonprofit programs and government programs where anyone says we have resources that people are not approaching us and using that we have available, and we'd like to make sure they get used. That's something that doesn't happen very often. Chuck, jump on in.
Yeah, and I just want to say that even though we help people start a business and grow a business, Mission Community Services and the Women's Business Center is also a business. We're a nonprofit, and we've taken advantage of America's Job Center's on-the-job training program. It has been wonderful because we needed to hire a full-time staff member, and you know, we have such specialized training that it's difficult to find someone with even 50% of that, because we have all of our SBA requirements and on top of that Facebook and e-newsletters. And anyway, we went to America's Job Center and we found a person, and she's just great. You know, and over a six-month period, they paid half the wage while she was getting trained up, and now she's there full-time and everyone's happy. So thank you.
Okay. Was the process tough for you, Chuck?
No.
Did we make you
simple.
Fill out loads and loads of paperwork?
No. We met once a month for 10 minutes. It was great.
Yeah. Okay, so that's why you brought him here. Okay, I understand that. Anne.
Well, I just want to say that this has been a really good experience to just share the resources that we have in the community to help people get jobs, get better jobs, and help businesses find and retain talent, talented work, local talent, where they don't have to go outside of the county to find talent. Like I said, we're living in an exciting time for job seekers and businesses. I've seen a level of collaboration that I haven't seen. It's pretty unprecedented in terms of collaboration, where the Workforce Development Board and the California Community Colleges are doing a big regional plan, working with businesses to figure out what their workforce needs are, what skills they need, and then, like I said, aligning all the training providers so they actually have the credentials that employers are looking for. You know, what a concept. Mm-hmm. Aligning the training to employers' needs. And out of that, over the, you know, starting now in the next 5, 10, 15 years, we're going to see a huge focus. I mean, already California has budgeted $200 million per year on career and technical education. So people, if you are, you know, at home and wanting to know if you can get the skills and credentials to get a better job, now is the time to come in and to work with our host of other community partners throughout the county to help you increase your position in the labor market.
There's part of this that we did not touch on enough, and I realize we have a few more minutes than we thought I had. We've talked about the increase in minimum wage. Can you give us a recap of exactly what's happening to the minimum wage? I realize we tried to steer this discussion away from issues of the minimum wage, but I think it's a realistic question. What is the timeline for the change in the California minimum wage, and how is it going to affect things beyond that?
Well, I'm not a Well, I had full disclosure, I just moved to California 2 months ago. So maybe Allison could be best at answering this. But I know that, you know, from, you know, starting at $10 an hour, it's going to increase a dollar every year. I know that by 2021, it'll be $15 an hour. And right now we're at...
We're at 10 now, then come January 1, it'll be another 50-cent increase. And so there are incremental increases until it hits $15 an hour.
There's an element of the business community that has specifically said on a regular basis that this is going to do away with more jobs than it's going to create. Is the feedback that you're getting from employers a big concern about the increase in minimum wage, or a perception that it's just going to help people stay on the Central Coast and become customers and employees?
I think we all know that reducing income inequality is best for the entire community, but yeah, it's going to be a struggle for small businesses. That in combination with some of the other things, the paid sick leave and health care, it is going to be increasingly difficult specifically for small businesses, but it's good for the community.
I think it'll
increase worker productivity, hopefully.
I think the market will adjust over time. I don't think it's going to be a rosy picture right at the start. But I think that over time, employers will see increased productivity, increased retainment of the talent, less turnover. When workers show up and they're financially stable and they're not staying up late at night worrying about debt and credit and how they're going to make it when their car breaks down on the way to work, mm-hmm. I think that we're going to see better productivity. And Goodwill Central Coast, you know, we're an employer too. And we're a nonprofit, so raising the minimum wage is definitely affecting our business as well as the productivity of our workers. So, and I think the American Job Centers can help align the resources that business needs. We're connected to the business services community to figure out how do you incrementally increase your employee wages in such a way where you're meeting your financial bottom line and also the needs of your workers.
Are any, and Chuck, maybe this goes to you and some of the things that you're working with your people. Is there a perception at all that an increased minimum wage, if the minimum wage goes up, and I let's just take a simple hypothetical, and that is, if my wage goes up by $1 an hour and I'm working a 40-hour a week job, pre-tax, I'm going to have $40 more to cover my expenses. The likelihood is I'm not putting that in my mattress. I'm not putting it in the savings account that's getting nothing as far as interest on it. I'm going to spend that money. Mm-hmm. But what I don't hear in the discussion is that increased wages mean increased spendable money for people, and how does that affect what the economy does?
Well, you're right. If people make more, they'll spend more. It helps the economy in general. But the goal, and certainly with self-employment, which is what our niche is to make more than that so you can actually start saving some money and at some point buy a house and have other, quote, luxuries that you'd like to have and saw your parents have. And if I can give a little shout-out real quick before we're done, our website is www.startasmallbiz, that's biz.org. If anyone's interested.
Startasmallbiz.org.
Yes.
Okay.
If anyone's interested in more information.
If they don't remember that, if they Google Mission Community Services Corp., they'll also find you.
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's the one I test often because I know we can't always get people in the ability, especially if they're driving their car and they're talking with somebody else while they're listening to the program, to write things down. So the other side of the question is, too, is how do people find how do people find about the California Job Center? American Job Center of California. I'm going to get that backwards a million times. Sorry.
So we're located at 880 Industrial Way. Our phone number is 805-903-1400. You can also go to slowworkforce.com, slowworkforce.com, and find out about business services through the Workforce Development Board, youth services through ECHRD, and then America's Job Center as well.
Okay. Chuck, phone number for you guys?
805-595-1357.
Okay. And we're not promoting a private business, but I can tell you that it's amazing. Google still will find anybody, even if they don't want to be found. So it's a good way to do it. And I'll remind our listeners that the program will also be on the KCBX website, and so you can listen to the program again, and usually our narrative about our programs will have some contact information on there also. I thank you all very much. It's been a good show, and it's a topic that's important to all of us, not because it's an election season, but because it's an everyday issue that we have to look at. And I thank you all for listening. This has been Central Coast Voices. I want to remind you that this is a project of Action for Healthy Communities. The report Vital Signs that we do every 3 years can be found at actionslo.org. Give you a snapshot of the community. Some of the data that we talked about today can be found on the upcoming report that will be out in December of this year, along with some of the information that some of my guests alluded to that was put together by United Way and their forecasting of and looking at a snapshot of what things are like throughout California and the Central Coast. Next week, Chris Kington Barker is going to have her time full. She'll be speaking with Sam Blakesley, the founder of the Institute for Advanced Technology and Public Policy at Cal Poly, Tommy Zhang, who is the San Luis Obispo County Clerk Recorder, and Dr. Michael Latner, who's the director of the Cal Poly Masters in Public Policy Program. And they're going to talk about the 17 measures that are on the upcoming ballot. They have a lot of hot-button issues, which include medical marijuana issues, death penalty repeal, school funding, gun laws. You name it, it's being talked about, and it shows up in a 224-page voter's guide that we'll all have to try and get through. And she'll be with you next week with her guests. This is Central Coast Voices. We're a production of Action for Healthy Communities. And I want to thank Joan Gellert-Sargent, who is underwriting of this program for us. So we have the funds to do production work, and this has been Central Coast Voices.